Hey, if you've suffered an injury in an accident and would like a free case review, make sure you call the super team at Daspit Law Firm. Free consultations are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 713-322-HURT. That's 713-322-HURT. Or you can go to the website, DaspitLaw.com.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Hello and welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show on this Monday, May the 1st of 2023. I am Paul Gallant. This is the most interactive sports talk show in Houston on a day where the Astros lost 2 of 3 to the Phillies in a rematch of the World Series over the weekend. I think it's started some murmurs of frustration about Jose Abreu, who's off to a slow start, who got paid a lot. I think if you were watching last night's game, you might have noticed that to open things up, the Astros had the bases loaded with no outs, and Jose Abreu gets up to the plate, grounds into a double play. Not ideal, but we also have an entire Houston Texans draft class to talk about. There was a press conference on Friday after my show. It featured C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, picks 2 and 3. D'Amico Ryans was there. Nick Caserio was there, and I just want to get you guys ready for a word that you are going to hear perhaps as much as you heard the word culture over the entirety of the Texans' Jack Easterby era. Will Anderson, at his post-draft press conference on Friday.
Yeah, it's very exciting, but I know for both of us, you know, we just want to keep our head down and work and be intentional with everything we do and swarm to the ball. You know what I'm saying? It's about swarming and being intentional, keep your head down and working. And that's what we plan to do when we get here. I mean, the guys in the locker room, they're great. They're special. I mean, I've been here. I've been around them. You know, after the drive, I got text messages from some of them. So that just shows what type of place this is, and it speaks volumes of what type of people they have in this organization.
Swarming. Guys, you are going to hear the word swarm so many times over the next couple of months. You're going to want to deafen yourself. You know, you're going to want to put on your headphones and blare some of Pantera's mumble rap metal into your ears to deafen you so that you will not hear the word swarm anymore. It is the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Sean Mapes, are you ready for the swarm of the word swarm for the Houston Texans this year?
Yeah, I'm ready to swarm it up.
Sounds so enthusiastic.
Yeah, I'm ready to swarm it up. I think as a radio show, we try to swarm every day, swarm people's ears with this radio goodness. I'm glad that we were able to indoctrinate this young man. So you know, within 72 hours? No, 24
didn't take
hours.
Long. Didn't take long.
Didn't take long. So good job, D'Amico Ryans. That speaks to how well he can coach. Imagine, you know, he got him to say swarm 2 times in 5 seconds.
Coachable.
After 24 hours, imagine a whole offseason with this dude.
Ooh. Seriously, I think they're going to try to work this into every single press conference the rest of the year. But the draft class is done.
Did we ever find out if swarm stood for anything? Or is it just like the word swarm?
It's just the word swarm.
Okay, so it's not like dare.
I wanted it to be an acronym where it was like
super,
super fast to the football. W, winning mentality only. A, that's what we want to strive for every single day. R, this is getting R-worded. M,
man, I wish this was over.
Exactly. The draft is done. And now we have arrived at another insufferable point during the NFL offseason. Oh, you thought I was done bitching about talking about football leading up to the draft? Now we're at the point where people are going to give grades to what happened over the weekend in the draft, even though no one's going to have any clue for 2 to 3 years. So I want to tell you something. Anyone trying to tell you that the Texans draft was good or bad is completely full of it. at this moment in time. You cannot factually say it was a good or a bad draft. You can like what they did. You can dislike what they did. You can't say it was good or bad. You can't. There's no way to prove that it's a good or bad draft. But I hate this week because this is the week where all of a sudden pundits across NFL media are going to give grades for all of the drafts that took place. They shouldn't do that. There are only, I think, three things that you can theorize after an NFL draft is done. Number one, how a team views itself. I think you could argue that the Texans believe they're a lot better than they actually are after what they did this weekend in drafting C.J. Stroud, in drafting Will Anderson, bringing in some of the free agents that they brought in this offseason. They believe that they are better than you think they are, clearly. And I think that if you see them make a trade for Will Anderson after trading for a quarterback, clearly they are of the belief that in an AFC South, which isn't that good, they can compete. Is that true? I have no idea. I really don't. No one does. But they clearly have a lot of confidence in themselves. Then, after that, what was their strategy? Nick Caserio likes trading. They had 12 picks going into the draft. Nick Caserio made 8 trades over the course of the weekend. They leave it with 8 picks. And you know about C.J. Stroud. You know about Will Anderson, the other picks. Center from Penn State, Juice Scruggs in the second round. Nathaniel Dell, Tank Dell from Houston in the third. A small wide receiver at pick number 69. Nice. Fourth round, Dylan Horton, a defensive lineman from TCU. Fifth round, Henry Tuo'o. I'm terrified every single time I read that. A linebacker from Alabama. Sixth round, they drafted a center from Notre Dame. His name is Jarrett Patterson. Sixth, Xavier Hutchinson, the leading receiver at Iowa State. Seventh round, Brandon Hill, a safety from Pittsburgh who's super athletic. So that's what they did. Their strategy was, we are going to, first off, get defensive linemen. Second, get interior offensive linemen. Third, try to fill playmakers at some point. Only one playmaker they brought in with Tank Dell, but conceptually you like the way that they use him. And of course, we'll see what they're able to do with the kid that they got in the sixth round, Xavier Hutchinson. A lot of people like the Hutchinson pick as far as a sixth round goes. And then the other thing that you can theorize, you can't grade what they did. You can't really determine whether or not it was a good or a bad draft. What can this team do with these players conceptually? I would say right now that Juice Scruggs, it is very likely that he is the starting center from Penn State this coming season. After that, okay, Tank Dell is probably going to be used on the outside and in sort of gadget plays, and maybe he ends up being your returner. That's a guy who did have a punt return touchdown last year. I think it was against South Florida. 17 total touchdowns on the season. And then after that, it really is entirely speculation. So I don't like this week and specifically this day because this is the day where everyone looks back at the draft and they give their full grades on what went down. So we're going to do something different here on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston because we're wacky. We are going to grade the grades that were given out for the Houston Texans in this draft over the past weekend because I don't think they do a good job. The big problem with these grades is that everyone is chicken bleep. Seriously, I can't believe how many cowards consider themselves to be experts on every single player that is going to be drafted. And then once the draft is done, none of them have the balls to actually grade like a good teacher. It's a bunch of participation trophy public school BS. Yeah, I'm taking shots at public schools. I didn't go. I'm a little cake eater. Thayer Academy, Shorecrest Preparatory School, Syracuse University, elite schools only. And I had good graders. No one did a very good job, I think, with the grades that were given out for this past weekend with the Houston Texans draft. So that's on the table. If you're frustrated with the Astros lineup as well, especially with Jose Abreu, that is welcome all show long. You can vent on that. It is not looking good a couple of weeks into the year. All of that on the table. It's the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Headed for Tank. He'll give it a go. First man misses. He's got an alley. Right back up the middle to cut at midfield. There goes Tank Dell. The burst inside the 20, and he's gone. Touchdown, Cougars, on the 68-yard punt return.
I have a question that could potentially get me canceled. Why is it that lady play-by-play broadcasters feel the need to sound as close to that of a man as possible? Is that what they're told? Are they instructed to do that by their coaches? I seriously want to know, because I imagine if you were to have a conversation with some of the lady play-by-play announcers that you see on ESPN from time to time, I would imagine that they have a normal talking voice and a broadcaster voice as well. I'm curious. I also would love there to be like a Valley Girl play-by-play.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say, it would be hard to imagine, like, and Tank Dell takes it from the 20 to the 10 to the 5.
Oh, my God. That was stupendous. Yeah, that would be amazing. We need to have somebody do it. You have to represent every single community out there. And the Valley Girl, Sorority Girl, play-by-play broadcasters, that's the next evolution. Before we get to the Gen Z broadcasters, of course, who are just going to be, on God, fam, Tank Dell, no cap, was bussing.
I think Barstool Sports will take care of this for us. I think they'll make the necessary. If anyone's going to knock down those barriers, it'll be Barstool.
Okay, cool. Hopefully they will end up doing that. That's the voice of Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm
feels
Paul
like, feels like you pushed that opinion off on me. That I was did. Sean Mapes who said
I
that.
I did. That was Sean Mapes who was wondering why there are women broadcasters, period.
I was not wondering.
You wonder why Vanessa left. Good God, Sean. Good God.
Anyway. Some of my best friends are women broadcasters.
So the NFL draft is done. In the last segment, I told you there's only three things you should be allowed to do when it comes to talking about an overall draft class. Number one, you can theorize how the team that made picks views itself. Two, you can theorize what their strategy was and how they will use. Number three, some of these players conceptually, you can also theorize there. But after that, you really do not know what's going to happen. But something that I've found very amusing over the last couple of years is that all of this analysis that we do of the NFL draft leading up to it, of all of the prospects, you would think that every single year with more and more people doing it and more video readily available to people all over the United States of America, that people would be getting more confident with their opinions on a draft once it's done. Hilariously, that is not actually the case. So I thought to myself, okay, well, let's take a look at all of the draft grades that are given out to the Houston Texans, and we will grade those draft grades. We're not going to grade what the Texans did. I have no idea. Could be good, could be bad. Lame, I know, but that's literally all you can say. And I think the other thing that's perhaps debatable is, did they trade too much to go and get Will Anderson? And I know some people believe that they did. Honestly, I'm of the belief that they got their guys, and we'll see how their guys play. Because if the guys are good, you're not going to care about how much they traded to get Will Anderson or how much they perhaps left on the table by taking C.J. Stroud second overall and not trading out of that pick, which I think there are some people out there that did. So anyway, let's go through and grade the grades that were given out for the Houston Texans and what they did over the weekend. Ooh, yeah. Little football time in Houston in the background. NFL.com gave the Houston Texans a B+. Here's what's pathetic about NFL.com, though. They gave out 17 A's. 17 A's in the draft. 17. What kind of...
Over half.
This is... What is this? African-American studies at North Carolina for the basketball team? Everyone got an A? That is insane. Over half, as Sean said. The lowest grade. Can you guess what the lowest grade was?
D minus?
C plus.
Oh.
And it's NFL.com.
State run media.
C plus. I mean, think about how easy of a class that is. But here's what the Texans write-up says. The Texans made the correct move selecting Stroud as their next quarterback. Anderson could be an excellent edge. So basically, they like it. I'm going to give NFL.com and their 17 A's, though, I am giving them an F. Have some balls. You think Goodell's going to be mad if somebody gets a D? No.
Make it the Commanders. No one will care.
Exactly. No one will care. C plus as the lowest grade. That's pathetic. Mel Kiper of ESPN.com gave the Houston Texans a B. He pats himself on the back for thinking it was weird that people were discussing how they might not take a quarterback second overall. But he believes that they reached significantly on day two to take Juice Scruggs out of Penn State, the center, and to take Tank Dell. Even though he thinks it was a nice move, he thought that they traded too far up. So he gives them a B. He only gave out four A's. But the lowest grade that he gave for anybody, B minus.
So everyone got B's?
Everyone got B's. Everyone got B's. At least.
That is the funniest way to protect yourself on all sides.
It's such coward BS. Have a bleeping take. You invented this. You invented the pre-draft process. Have some balls, dude.
The only thing that would be better if everyone got a C+. It's just like, everyone, pretty good. Won some, lost some.
Terrible. You know who else disappointed me, too? So I'm giving that. Did not complete. B- for everybody. Pete Prisco of CBS Sports. I like Pete Prisco because Pete Prisco has opinions. Pete Prisco gave the Houston Texans a B. Throughout all of his grading, he gave out four A's. But Pete Prisco's lowest grade was a C-. And only three teams got it. Again, C is satisfactory. A C is 75 out of 100. It's not ideal, but C's get degrees, right? That's passable. It's satisfactory. What happened to people having balls and hot takes with the NFL draft? Pete, specifically. Fox Sports gave the Houston Texans a B+. The write-up is very, nothing. It's by Ben Arthur for Fox Sports. I like Ben, but on paper, the Texans have one of the NFL's best draft classes at the top. And that's it. Doesn't go into any further detail other than that. So they gave him a B+. I'm giving this one a D-. A D-. They did not give the Texans an A here, but the lowest grade for Fox Sports, get this, 1 C-. That's it. Where are my Fs? Come on. DraftKings gave the Houston Texans an A+. They also gave out 10 A's. The lowest grade they gave, 1 D+. Sporting News is the one that has the most stones here, but guess what? They also gave out 12 A's. The Texans were one of them, an A-, 3 D's. Okay, little bit of harsh grading there. Walter Football, a website I like, gave the Texans an A-, but they also gave out 11 A's. The only reason I'm going to give this a C, the only grade that I like, is because they gave the Dallas Cowboys a D. But that was the only D. So, can someone please explain to me?
It's a big D. Because it's Dallas.
Get nice. It. That was a good one, Sean. Got anything
Dallas.
Else?
Dallas Cowboys.
Keep going. I want more comedy.
Wait for later in the show.
Okay, cool. Look. Draft grading is dumb. But with all the people that grade draft picks, you would think that at least somebody would have the balls to give an F out. And I don't know if people are scared of getting freezing cold taked, like the bad takes about what the Seahawks did in 2012. Everyone gave them an F. Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, what are they doing? I don't know if that's the main reason that nobody has any stones anymore, but draft grades are dumb and no one has any teeth when they do them. And it annoys the hell out of me. This is your craft. You study the NFL draft leading up to it. You do all these mock drafts, and then everybody gets an A, or everyone gets a B, and no one even gets a failure or a D. How am I supposed to take any of this seriously? The answer is you shouldn't, because, again, you cannot grade a draft for 2 to 3 years. You can't. You can act like you can, Sorry, wrong. You can't do it until you actually see these guys on the field and whether or not they can play. Just because a team drafts leader of men or culture fits or whatever, it doesn't mean that things are going to change overnight. Anyway, end rant. This is the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call, to text. You can also join us on Twitter, at Gallant Says, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. I guess CBS Sports gave a couple of D's for the Texans, but I think in totality, the actual overall grade for the draft got somehow averaged up to like a C+, B-, B+. It's strange.
The funniest one is Mel Kiper only giving 4 A's, but then the lowest is B-. So that means 28 teams got a B.
Yep.
28 teams.
28
you're
teams.
You're just scrolling through. And you're like,
I was shocked. I was like, wait, this is a B. This is also a B. This is also a B. We have a couple of texts, 713-780-3776. The Texans are trying to make Swarm a thing. Do you think Nick Caserio's seat is Swarm? Texted somebody in. Get it? That was kind of funny.
That was good.
That was kind of funny. Because it could be warm.
Yeah.
Because he might get fired.
Nick Caserio's seat. It's warm.
Yeah, got it. Nice job, bro. Another text. Why did Dusty have Jose Abreu? Because we were talking about that to open up the show. Jose Abreu batting sixth, then moving back to fourth last night. Yeah, I don't know about that one. Maybe it's not too early to start asking questions about Dusty Baker lineup decisions because he did have a very good postseason. It is May 1st. We are officially a month into the year. I'm just asking the question. Can I ask a question about Dusty Baker's lineup? Because he deserved a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. But, yeah, Jose Abreu, I don't know what's going on, guys. And, I mean, Jeff Bagwell giving that contract out. Like, it's clearly a Jeff Bagwell move. He gave out the Rafael Montero contract. Just a strange move because Abreu still hits for average. But you essentially have an expensive version of Yuli Gurriel, who's slightly younger but way more expensive. Anyway, Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in and text in as well. Could C.J. Stroud and what he's been through over the last month make him unlock another level? One prominent NFL writer suggests yes. Paul Gallant Show, don't go anywhere.
ESPN
97.5.
Ready for some football, baby.
Jack, hush.
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. Sean was just telling me during the commercial break. You can hear our commercial break conversations. Twitch.tv/ESPN 97.5. That somebody put out a 7-round mock draft for next year's draft already. Already.
Yeah, I'm working to give credit. Oh, it was from at Draft Countdown, from draftcountdown.com. So that it, to
that's
be fair,
so Draft Countdown. To they're be fair, ahead of everybody when it comes to the countdown.
Yeah, that was 9 a.m. yesterday. Is when they
Good God, dude. Give yourself a weekend. Like, once the draft is done on Saturday, go outside. Get some fresh
have
air.
Have a drink.
Jeez Louise.
Do you want to know who he has number one? Caleb Williams.
Wow, what a shocker.
And then number two, Marvin Harrison Jr.
Oh.
Wow.
Wide receiver. Number two. Okay. Man.
Do you want me to keep going?
No.
Because there's 7 rounds of this.
We could go all the way. Who's Mr. Irrelevant? That's what I want to know.
Good question.
Mr. Irrelevant of the NFL Draft Countdown's 2024 mock draft, which is already out, guys. That is the draft content that people truly care about. And Mr. Irrelevant, the potential Brock Purdy of the 2024 NFL draft is...
1 second. Taking
see,
because
it's a crappy website that's not actually.
I'm actually surprised it's even on like my phone. It's mobile. Whoa, there is no.
Didn't even do Mr. Irrelevant.
So what they a did all the. So there's 255 picks.
Mm-hmm.
They did 254, mm-hmm. and then the the New York Jets had the 255th. They just left it blank.
So the Jets are winning the Super Bowl.
I guess.
Is what he's suggesting.
Or they traded for the seventh round pick. But right. Owen Daffer, kicker, East Carolina, is who, the last player
second,
that is named.
Second, almost Mr. Irrelevant. That guy. Okay, cool. Peter King of Football Morning in America talked to Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud after he had been taken by Houston. He was in Houston, I guess, this past weekend. And he gets the feeling that, much like with Michael Jordan, the pre-draft process for Stroud has become personal. A little tidbit. The Texans have asked Stroud to let the S2 test controversy go, but he caught a couple of last licks in on it. A player who played the way Stroud did, particularly in putting up 41 points in his superb final college game in the playoff against Georgia, is not a player who can't process or can't idea defense. I understand using every tool in the bag to analyze players before the draft, wrote King, and I check out why Stroud scored low on the test, but to think it's a good indicator of future failure, I mean, watch the games he's played. As far as C.J. Stroud goes, D'Amico Ryans, during his Friday, during his Saturday appearance on the NFL Network, had this to say about what they really liked about C.J. Stroud. It wasn't just that Georgia game.
Everyone knows the Georgia game. That was an exciting game, one of his best games. You've seen him moving out of the pocket, but it wasn't just that moment for us. It was really just to see the improvement from game one up until that Georgia game, right? That's the thing that stuck out to me about CJ. He still has room to improve, right? And he's willing to put the work in to improve. So a guy that has that mindset, he's willing to work, willing to get better, knows some of the flaws and weaknesses that he needs to work on and is willing to work on it. Like, I love his mindset.
I liked hearing that he got better as the season went along. Ryan's biggest task is going to be getting the most out of all of these players. How do you continue to improve as a player, especially once you get from the college level to the NFL level? It will be a lot different for C.J. Stroud. I don't necessarily entirely agree with Peter King's assessment that, yeah, you can definitively say that Stroud is good at going through reads quickly entirely based off of that game against Georgia. I don't know that that's definitive proof, but clearly he played awesome in that game, and it makes you feel pretty good about his chances at the next level. Here's C.J. Stroud talking about that Georgia game during his press conference on Friday.
I felt like, yeah, the Georgia game was just kind of the stamp. It was the icing on the cake to just let people know what I could really do. I finally got the ability to start running some more. I feel like that was a part of my game. But, I mean, playing out of Ohio State, you have great receivers that are usually always open. So I feel like I'm very, very strategic and very disciplined on my reads, which my receivers love. My running backs love it because they can get out, and I think I do a great job with my IQ, picking up protections and things like that. So that Georgia game was kind of just a stamp on it. I feel like I've been consistent throughout my whole career, but I definitely think I opened up some eyes to some different type of things. And honestly, I want to show my athleticism some more at the next level. If that's what the offense causes me to do, I'm definitely willing to do such. So, yeah, that Georgia game was definitely just the icing on the cake.
Peter King, in that conversation that he had with C.J. Stroud, also got this out of Stroud, who said that S2 test score being released is something that, in his mind, is a humble moment that God wanted him to go through. He said, yep, critics are paid to critique. He seems rather sensitive to the idea, though, that his IQ is not that high. Here's what he said with King. Quote, I have a great memory when it comes to football. I feel like there's different ways to be geniuses. You don't just have to be book smart. You can be book smart. You can be analytics smart. You can be numbers smart. You can be football smart. I really think that there's different types of ways to be smart. That's something that I pride myself on. And I am book smart. I did have over a 3.0 in college. I had over a 3.0 in high school. I know that I can think. I can process very, very fast. The film, you can see me going from first option to second and back to one and then to three and to four if I have to. I can check down. I can use my feet. So he doesn't like being told by others that he is not the quickest going through his reads. And he wants everybody to know that he's smart. We'll see if he actually is. By the way, there was something that happened during that Friday press conference a lot that does make me wonder if we've officially turned the page when it comes to the Texans from the Jack Easterby culture era. Here are a number of the Houston Texans interacting with one another. Stroud specifically, but you also hear Nick Caserio for a moment. You hear D'Amico Ryans and others talking about the kind of players that they've brought into the building.
Nobody been asking Nick questions, man.
Just play well, man. Yeah. That's all. Just play well.
Love, man. Who made it shake? So
they've heard enough from me for a long time. They just want to hear from me.
No, we're gonna give you your flowers for sure. But nah, man, yeah, also super stoked, man, to be sitting here with these special men. I think that's like what Will said earlier, man, just that's what excites me, that God doesn't make mistakes. And I'm sitting next to three. And I'm, yeah.
You can put yourself in there. That's okay.
All right, cool. I add it. All right, cool. But nah, man, just three men that are really great in their families, great in the community. Men of God, and that's something that I am and Will is as well. So it excites me just to see what the future holds, because I think, man, we don't got no limit. Like, we can do whatever we put our minds to and whatever Christ strengthens us to do. So, man, I'm just really excited.
A lot of God talk in the press conference on Friday. And look, I'm not someone that has a lot of faith, but I'm not also somebody who's going to tell somebody, hey, don't have faith and don't talk about it publicly. You can talk about what you want to talk about. This is the beauty of the United States of America. But clearly, all of these guys are spiritually inclined, and it does make me wonder if we're really totally turning the page away from a Jack Easterby era where it seemed like one of the big priorities was having high culture players in the locker room, maybe even at the expense of talent. Nick Caserio even said on the Friday press conference, our four players are good players, but they're good human beings. A lot of that rhetoric still in the air, and you definitely got a lot of that during the Friday press conferences for C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson. A lot of it. And I wonder if that still is a big part of who they want to be as an organization. Does not necessarily lend itself to success, getting all good guys, good men.
Oh, are you saying Texas needs some bad dudes on the team?
I'm not saying that, Sean. I'm not going to get to that. All I'm saying is, it was a theme that was heavy throughout Friday's press conference.
I will say, though, like, if you try to build an NFL team without guys that are very, have a lot of faith in God, I feel like you wouldn't have that good of a team. There's not that many, like, atheists or Satanists.
Agnostics, Satanists. Like, Satanists. I'm with you there.
I feel like just, look at where most of the football players come from. They come from the South, and that is... where most of the, especially Christianity is.
Yeah, there's a lot of it down here. Look.
And then when you get on a podium in Houston, Texas, you want to play that up.
That's true. And no judgment here. All I'm saying is we heard a lot of it during the Jack Easterby era, and we're still hearing it. And I imagine there are some who are wondering, okay, well, wait, has this organization moved away from prioritizing that over the actual football? A fair question to ask. I am not suggesting that it has not changed. I'm just saying, if you watched that press conference on Friday and heard the amount of times that they were talking about faith and being good men, it was noteworthy.
I think there's just a difference between having, like, actual football people that believe in God and then having a chaplain who is trying to run the football team.
Great point. That's Sean Apes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. The Astros lost 2 of 3 to the Phillies over the weekend, and people are really frustrated with Jose Abreu. At what point can we start to wonder if that was a mistake? Is it already something that's in bounds? You get to answer that next on the most...
This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
This ball is driven to left field off the bat of Meyer. Schwarber watches it. rattle off that wall out there. Second home run of the year for Myers. He took a curveball deep to left. And the Astros up their lead.
Not a great weekend series for the Houston Astros. They did win yesterday's game, but a loss on Friday, a loss on Saturday does put a bit of a damper on the overall vibe for this team. And look, they'd won three series in a row, so I guess they were bound to come back to earth at some point. But this also is a Phillies team that I don't look at as one of the best teams in baseball. I think they got hot at the right time last year, and they're still waiting for Bryce Harper to get back. What's frustrating about this past weekend series was the lack of offense. And there are injuries, of course, but let's just start off with Friday. Just three hits. Jeromy Peña, his home run, the only run. 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position. And they wasted at least a quality start by Framber Valdez. Excuses to be made, right? Someone named Ryland Bannon was their designated hitter. No offense to Ryland Bannon, but I was like, wait a second. They have a Bannon? Steve? Who's this? Saturday, six hits. Jeromy Peña, the only run with a home run. 8 left on base, 0-for-6 with runners in scoring position. And then you had yesterday. The game begins, bottom of the first inning. You have the bases loaded. Jose Abreu's batting cleanup. He grounds into a double play. You only get one run with that bases loaded beginning to the game. 9 hits, but 6 left on base. 2-for-10 with runners in scoring position. If you're doing the math in your head, they were 2-for-19 with runners in scoring position over the weekend. Abreu right now is getting very frustrating because I think a lot of people are wondering where the power numbers are. And I think what's unfortunate about what the Astros did when it comes to Jose Abreu is that the numbers were there that showed that Abreu's power numbers are not what they've been in the past. I'm not sure what the website is, if it's FanGraphs or what, but you can now quantify how hard a hitter is hitting the ball and where they're generally driving the ball to. And while I do think that there is a place in baseball for contact hitters, guys who can just slap it into the outfield, Abreu's not doing it at a clip that makes you overlook the fact that he's also just not really delivering from a power perspective, and that's why you gave him a contract. It's 3 years and $60 million. And to go a little bit further back, and I heard the guys on the bench talking about this towards the end of the show, a caller called in and said, like, there was a broadcast moment where I think Jeff Bagwell was on for an Astros-White Sox game, I'm guessing, and may have just started to talk about how much he liked Abreu on the broadcast. That's at least what the caller said. I don't remember that specific moment, but you could easily see a former first baseman, Hall of Fame first baseman, who's looking to get away from an overabundance of analytics, looking at a guy in Jose Abreu and saying, yeah, this guy's good. He's still capable of hitting. I'm going to bring him in. I'm going to upgrade the first base position for this team, maybe take it back a step on defense with Yuli Gurriel gone, but I'm going to take it another step up by bringing in Abreu. It's early. It's only been a month, but do you feel like it's going to get better for Jose Abreu from a power perspective? I'm still not freaking out because I do believe it is early. But it's not like he is coming off of some major injury or something like that, right? I mean, we're talking about a guy who you have just seen a noticeable decline in some of the power numbers over the last couple of years. And you're paying in 2023, baseball-wise, for power. You're paying for guys that can put it into the bleachers, put it into the gap. We're not seeing that from him to this point. And then they're putting him fourth in the lineup. And then add the fact that the Astros pitching wasn't great over the weekend. Framber was solid at the very least, but Christian Javier still yet to have that dominant outing. This is a team that he helped combine to no hit in the World Series. Phil Maton gave up a run, finally. I texted/tweeted Sean. He's got to get rid of that number 88. Sorry, 88 is not a good number, especially if you're in Europe. And ever since I saw that you should not wear the numbers 88 in Europe because of what it stands for, I just think no one should wear 88 anymore. Just get rid of it.
Sorry, Michael Irvin.
Michael Irvin.
CeeDee Lamb.
Dez Bryant. Yeah, the Cowboys. Not a good look. Not a good look. And then you had Jose Urquidy leave yesterday's game with shoulder soreness. Mauricio Dubon's hitting streak came to an end. Chaz McCormick started a rehab stint as well. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. A couple of other things across baseball that I have found entertaining, at least from over the weekend. There have been so many standing ovations that lead to pitch clock violations of late. Baseball has now introduced a new policy. If you believe that your player is going to maybe get a standing ovation, do you know what you have to do now? You have to put in at least 24 hours in advance a request to baseball to let that player have his moment, to let that player have his standing ovation. Because I guess it happened with the Mariners and the Blue Jays this weekend with Teoscar Hernandez, who was on the Blue Jays, now on the Mariners. But we saw Cody Bellinger, he's returning to Los Angeles, and he got called for a pitch clock violation during that standing ovation. That guy who's been a Pittsburgh Pirates minor leaguer for 13 years who got called up, his first pitch doesn't even get a pitch thrown his way. His first moment in the majors is a called strike because it was too long of a standing ovation. I do think it's pretty funny that they have to put in a request. And you know what? Here's the thing. Yeah, they should have to put in a request. You're not above the law. If you think it's going to happen, the first at-bat of the game, hey, guess what? Put in a request. You're not above the law, random 13-year minor league player who's finally having his dream come true. You're not above making baseball a more swift sport. Come on.
I do think 24 hours is a lot of time in advance. I mean, I guess like it's just someone's job to look at the schedule and be like, oh, we're playing, you know, like if the Astros go to Chicago to play the White Sox, they're like, huh, well, maybe Jose Abreu gets a... I would love to know the list of times teams have requested the... or submit the request of like, hey, there might be a standing go for our player going back to his old team, and then there just like isn't a standing ovation. Just all the guys that they're
that
like
really
he might
funny.
Get a standing ovation, just doesn't.
And like, he has to stand for the standing ovation that the request was put in for. So if he doesn't even get it,
he just has to stand.
Just has to
silence.
Stand there awkwardly in silence while everyone's like, "Wait, what's
Tip
going
his
on?"
Cap.
Man, that would make that person feel so bad about themselves too. Like they got nothing. Another interesting thing across baseball. Baseball has cropped out sell the team signs in Oakland. They've actually somehow like photoshopped it out of all videos. And I'm wondering if this is actually taking place on the broadcast too, because some of these are in center field. You can see the signs all over the place. Sell the team, sell the team. But baseball has photoshopped it out.
I mean, they can put in the like, you know, random ads for, you know, farm equipment or whatever they have, because like Doosan or whatever during the postseason, like how they'll superimpose ads like either on the back of the pitcher's mound or behind the, and so like I don't know, maybe they can.
I want to see this. I want to see some more of this. I want to see baseball really embrace, you know,
just in the metaverse,
communist Russia culture. Yeah, like it, some of the most impressive Photoshops of all time. You know who did them? Stalin. No, famous one. There's a picture where they were sitting on a bench and they were sitting nowhere close to one another. And Stalin Photoshopped himself closer to Lenin so it looked like they were sitting next to each other and like looking good. Had his face Photoshopped because he was famously, his face was disgusting. He had scars all over it. And he also Photoshopped his left arm and hand to be bigger because he had like a weird, short, like tiny looking left arm. Yeah. He was a tiny guy too. He did a great job with Photoshop. People talk about Kim Kardashian, but Joseph Stalin, like the real Photoshop master, he was doing this in like the 1930s. Crazy.
Did not know we were going to get Joseph Stalin praise today on
That's
the
not
Paul
praise.
Galancho.
It's not praise. I'm just saying he is why
Photoshop. He did a great job.
Joseph Stalin started photoshopping.
All right.
He did.
Shout out to you, Joseph Stalin.
You're the one saying to shout out. I'm just saying he started photoshopping.
Yeah, you said he did a great job.
Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5.
As leader of Russia, he did a great job.
And
92.5.
I did not say that at all. Coming up next, if you want to weigh in on the Houston Texans draft, that is open all show long. Plus, there was something that took place in last night's Astros game that happened a couple of times over the weekend, and I think this entire city is completely out on it. I'll tell you what it is next. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.